This is the London FinTech Podcast, bringing you practical insights and approaches, stories and inspiration from the innovators who are building the new world of financial services. Welcome to London FinTech Podcast. This is the second in our mini-series with Money 2020, following a really great episode with Scarlett Seymour, who heads up strategy at the conference at the end of last year. We're fast approaching Money 2020 Europe. And that's the Amsterdam show on 2nd to the 4th of June with lots of excitement. This is the European flagship fintech show, dubbed the world's largest fintech conference. I think that's a true statistic, and covering all the top themes, key speakers and innovations from across the world of financial technology. And what a great topic for this show. So in one conversation, I get to talk about the biggest themes, the speakers, the exhibitors and the show itself. And so we'll be hearing from our guest today a bit about the shape and scale of a conference like this and how do you actually put something like this on. Oliver Smith is the head of content for Europe for Money 2020. Both a hugely energizing role, I imagine, and probably slightly daunting one given the scale of the conference, I imagine. Luckily, Ollie has a background in fintech journalism, so he's definitely the right person for the job. He's held roles as content and editorial lead at Forbes and Fortune, amongst others, which he'll tell us about. But without further ado, welcome, Ollie.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be here. And yeah, great to be talking about the show. We're definitely getting to that exciting part of the year where it's, you know, mere months away, mere weeks away, we count it down by. But yeah, it's awesome. It's exciting to be here.
So how has your week gone so far? I'm having had a quick look at your LinkedIn. I think this might not be your only podcast, but how's it been so far?
Yeah, it's going well. It's going well. So we've launched our agenda on the website, so you can see the agenda. But really, my job is to make sure that all of the speakers, all of the sessions are as good as they can be. So right now, it's just making sure that every session is just turned up to 11, really, which is exciting, but it's also, as you say, very daunting.
Turned up to 11. So the Spinal Tap reference there. I wasn't expecting that this early in the conversation. So, Ollie, how did you get into this? I think this is your first Money 2020 as the head of content.
It is, yeah. But it's not my first Money 2020. Actually, 2017 was the first time I went to the show in Europe when it was in Copenhagen back then, when I was a fintech journalist back in the day. I have always looked up to it as really the big, you know, the big beast in the industry, the biggest show with the biggest names. My fintech journalism career led me here, and I feel very lucky to now be part of it. I also went to Money 2020 USA in Vegas just before Christmas, and I'm going to be in Asia in a couple of weeks in April as well for Money 2020 Asia in Bangkok. Really getting in deep, and yeah. But Europe is my favorite by far. So I can't wait to get out there this June.
So total immersion. And you talked about, you know, your journalism career. I think you were a tech reporter, for those in the UK, on City AM back in the day, but went on to bigger things. Is that right?
I was, yeah. I started in 2012 at City AM. It's a free sort of financial newspaper in London, very much for those on the square mile. Fantastic training ground for young journalists, you know, fresh out of university. And actually, that's where I started to discover a bit of what fintech is today. When I started off, I was covering the kind of startup beat around London, you know, the Silicon Roundabout and those first early startups that were starting to come through. And what I saw as the years went on was that actually finance and financial services was this niche within a niche, if you like, back then, where these fintech companies, which we didn't even call them fintech back then, were starting to really establish themselves. And I remember going to the first office party opening for Monzo back in 2015 and going and meeting Anne Boden for the first time in sort of 2016. Such an exciting period. And to just be a journalist and following that industry as it blossomed was a real privilege. And now I still get to be part of it, which is great.
That, I presume, gives you a unique context, really, on what's happening now. And we're going to get into this. So one of the themes for the show is the great rebundling. But you were around at the great unbundling and kind of the disruption and all the neobanks and the fintech startups and Silicon Roundabout and all of that, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah, 100%. It's amazing the difference. So really, in those mid-2010s, it was all about fintechs attacking the different elements of the bank. You know, what pieces can we pull off and can we spin off into these standalone companies, whether it was Monzo with banking or Wise, TransferWise back then with the payments piece. It was all of these individual elements. And then as we reached kind of the end of the trends, we moved towards this more of a partnership model where it suddenly became about securing the best partnerships with those banks. And now we find ourselves in the next stage, which is the rebundling. Fintechs are so big now, they can't just do one thing well anymore. They've got to do the whole piece. So this is your crypto companies that are launching tokenized equities. These are your, you know, neobanks, which now have to do payments and credit cards and insurance. They have to do everything. That rebundling, that great rebundling, is really one of the core kind of four themes of the show this year that we're really excited to explore.
Yeah, so I'm sure we will in the next few minutes. But just before we get into the show itself, and I always ask my guests this, everyone's always got a full-on 24/7 founder or enterprise role, and it's really important to rebalance and unwind. So I'm just curious on what people do when they're off duty. Anything interesting that you focus on when you're not working on Money 2020?
Gosh, well, I've got a 2.5-year-old daughter, so I'm never off duty. My duties sort of overlap a lot of the time, but no, she's a fantastic breath of fresh air after a busy day. We can go and sit in the garden on a sunny day like today, and that is delightful. So that's my relaxation, I guess.
Okay, never a dull moment, I'm sure. Before we jump right into today's episode, a quick thank you to our sponsor, NextWave. NextWave is an award-winning consultancy that is helping many of the world's leading banks, investment managers, and insurers deliver on their growth, efficiency, risk, and control goals and transform their businesses. With a senior team who have come from MD-level positions in major firms like HSBC, Barclays, and UBS, NextWave has both the deep industry expertise and the hands-on capabilities in AI, data, and automation to drive real results. More business outcomes and less PowerPoint from the consulting experience, as their clients like to say. NextWave has moved 2-week manual processes to 5-minute agentic automations, rescued global banking regulatory control programs, and digitized deal platforms, sustainability, and regulatory reporting systems. And they do much of this with hands-on engineering capabilities on leading technologies, which include ServiceNow, Alteryx, Quantexa, and Komunda. So if a modern and specialist alternative to the big brand consulting model sounds appealing, one which covers the full life cycle of strategy specialists and solutions, but with small practitioner teams, rapid delivery, and a better price point, then perhaps you should talk to NextWave. Visit nxwave.com to find out more and get in touch. That's nxwave.com. All right, let's get back to the episode. So let's talk about Europe 2026 then. So just give us a sense of size and coverage of the show. Because this, we're talking a lot of attendees, big numbers of speakers, many stages. Just give us a picture of the show.
Yeah. So last year we had 7,500 delegates who came to the show. We had over 450 speakers. We had over 200 sessions across 3 days. This is really a jam-packed show. Our stages, you know, if I said conference stage to you, you might think of something quite mundane. Actually, our stages are fantastic works of art in themselves. Last year, we had the nature stage, which was, you know, this beautiful, lush, green, you know, flourish that's going on. This year, we have a brand new collection of stages, which are all designed by some of the, you know, really world-leading stage designers. It's phenomenal what they do. You know, we call it a festival internally. It really is. It feels more like Glastonbury than a boring business conference. And I think that's part of what makes money so special within our industry. It's not just another conference. It's a really unique experience for 3 days.
Love that. The experience, design focus, almost sort of product design festival overlay. And these things, the conference circuit, you know, it needs to be fun. It needs to be energizing. And we all came out at the back end of the pandemic. Well, and so some of the sector were then thinking that we're all going to be attending conferences on headsets in the metaverse. And I think the reverse has happened. And I was at InsurTech conference this morning, and I recorded a podcast in an Airstream caravan parked in the car park. There's this mobile podcast studio. And that was, you know, it was something I wasn't expecting, and a bit quirky and really fun. And I was just having a conversation, and that's a different episode, so I won't go too far off track, but having a conversation about the human element of the conference and how we're all in this sort of digital deluge, and actually the human connection has become even more important. And so the complete reverse has happened post-pandemic, which is actually showing up at these forums and these events has become absolutely fundamental.
Yeah, and I love how conferences have changed over the last couple of years post-pandemic. As you say, with the kind of environments that people expect now, it's fantastic. It's moved on so much from, again, talking about the early days of fintech. I feel like we've entered this new world now, which is great. And Money 2020 can be a great part of that. Just to mention some of our stages and what we're doing, there's one in particular that I'm, there's two. There's one I'm really excited about called Money Lab this year. So it's a bit like an art gallery meets an Apple store. That's the kind of vibe that it has. And it's really an intimate learning environment. It's designed for workshops. It's designed for practical hands-on sessions, but a fantastic space that kind of brings that learning to life. Another one of our stages, which many people may have seen in the past, is Money Pot. So the Money Pot stage has this fantastic audio element to it, where we have these podcast booths which people can sit down and listen into with their headphones. Plus it has the beehive, this beautiful yellow gold beehive kind of element that goes through the experience. As I said, these are really, world-leaning designers who are coming up with these stages. And I can't wait for everyone to see what we have in store for June this year.
I'm looking forward to it as well. If plans go ahead, then it'll be a first for London FinTech Podcast and for me. I may be in or around one of those pod studios. So really looking forward to that. And it's interesting about this sort of art gallery Apple store piece you were describing. These conferences get so busy. Is that actually a sort of a moment of calm to learn something? Because you've got 8,000 people buzzing around, it's sometimes hard to take a phone call.
It is. I mean, it's one of, I guess in my role, it's one of those challenges, because every year we get feedback from delegates, and what they say to us is, we love the we love the big stages and the 50,000 foot kind of strategic viewpoints of what's going on. But we also want to learn, and we also come to the show to get real tangible takeaways. And the challenge that we set ourselves this year is, how do we bring real learning into the conference environment? And Money Lab is one of our answers to that question. It's our sort of physical response to what people are asking us for. The other one is what we're calling stage takeovers. So we're having these orbital stage takeovers, and essentially we're switching for a couple of sessions. We're just going to really focus in on one topic area and dive really deep into it. We're not going to chop and change between topics. We're going to really focus in. So fraud is a great example, where sometimes a single 30-minute session is just not enough to get into the detail. You need two or three conversations that approach it from a different angle. And that's when the attendees can get a lot more value from just a 30-minute session. They can actually start to dig deeper into a topic. And then what if we also had networking that happens immediately afterwards? So everyone who's been part of that fraud stage takeover then has the opportunity to network and talk to each other. These like-minded people from the industry can then start sharing and learning from each other. Again, that's just another example of how we're approaching this feedback that we've gotten.
Yeah, it's really creative. So, and my experience at conferences is that you are time slicing, and it's all fractional learning and bits of presentations and exhibitions. If you can go deep dive on a few topics and come away having really learned something, I can really see the value with that. Actually, before we go, so I'm going to sort of ask you to walk us through the conference and what's available in a moment. But just before we get too far into this, so we catch the audience that are still with us, 10 minutes in, any show offers, early bird discounts? You said the agenda had just gone up. Just for anyone out there who's thinking of coming to Amsterdam, and by the end of this conversation, I hope everyone who listens to this wants to come to Amsterdam, but just as anything that's on offer just now.
I mean, the best thing to do is to go to money2020.com, take a look at the website, take a look at the agenda, which has just launched. That is the best place to get started. The best price is the one that's on the website right now. Whenever you're listening to this, that is the best time to take a look. I would also encourage you to have a look at our speakers page, because that's where you can see all of the speakers that we're currently getting live on the website. I think there's over 170 that are currently listed on the website.
172, I counted it before this episode.
Awesome. Which is great, but we're adding more every day.
I just kept scrolling and I was like...
More being added every day. The content team, the whole content team is really hard at work, getting all of those sessions finalized, getting all those speakers on board. So yeah, head to money2020.com.
Okay, right. So I've checked out the agenda. I've scrolled through the very long list of speakers and I've decided that I'm going to come to Money 2020. And it's my first visit, perhaps my first time to Money 2020. You know, big setup. Can you just talk me through, how should I plan my visit to get the most from the show?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the best place to start is with our four content pillars. What these are how we structure all the content, all the sessions across the show. It really is kind of the foundation for how we build everything else out from there. The first one is AI and the agentic age. This is the most obvious one, maybe, but it's also, I think there's a subtlety in there, which is we're not just talking about AI, we're really talking about this shift towards agentic and agentic finance, which is that agent-to-agent interaction, which is starting. I'm so excited to explore this at the show. I think there's going to be some great demonstrations of agentic, you know, actually happening at the show. There might be some news there as well. It's super exciting. The second pillar is the great rebundling, which we've touched on already, that coming together. You're going to be hearing from companies like Kraken, who have launched tokenized equities, that coming together of two industries. You'll hear banks talking about launching stablecoins. You'll hear all of that kind of coming together will be happening at our show. The third one is Money Stack Rewired, stablecoins and beyond. This is our more technical pillar. This is where we're looking into the technical stack of the bank and what's happening within them. So stablecoins is a great example. How are banks actually launching stablecoins? How are they working together? What is the potential impact of this technology? But also topics like fraud, privacy, all of those elements that come into that tech stack of the bank. We're so excited to get into that. The fourth and final pillar is regulation in the fast lane. The speed and the change that we're seeing in the regulatory landscape at the moment is phenomenal. You know, it started last year when we had the Genius Act in the US, we had MiCA just before that in Europe. There's a lot of movement happening. We've got new rules coming down the line in terms of AML, anti-money laundering practices, in terms of authorized push payment fraud. There's a lot of change going on. And I think our show is the best place to stay up to date with what's happening and what's coming next when it comes to regulation. So yeah, so those four pillars, when you go on our agenda, you can actually search it by pillar. So you can say, look, I'm only interested in the regulatory conversations here. One button, click, and you can see your agenda just from a reg point of view. I should probably mention all of our stages because they're, as I said, they're all like works of art in my opinion. The orbital stage, which is our largest stage, is totally redesigned this year. We've moved from the nature stage last year to the orbital stage. So we've blasted off into space, if you like. But that has a beautiful light, you know, the most dynamic, amazing light show I think we've ever done at a Money 2020 show before. It's in a darkened environment. It really is a fantastic stage to be the center of gravity for the show, which, yeah, I can't wait to see it in person. Horizon stage, which is powered by MasterCard. And we like to think of it as TED Talks, but for fintech. So it's more aimed at short, snappy presentations, the kind of thing that you can dip into, but dip out of as well. I'm so excited for some of the talks we have programmed for that stage. Money Pot, I've mentioned already, the fantastic audio narrative that kind of comes through there, and also the Beehive element. The Intersection, which is one of our new stages for 2026. This is capturing the convergence of TradFi and DeFi, that kind of intersection of the two of them. I think Money is one of the only shows where we can bring together, we don't just target one of those industries, we're actually bringing both of them together. And at the intersection, we'll have some of those deep dive conversations on what's happening in both TradFi and DeFi and as they come together. Money Lab, I won't mention again because I've already mentioned that. But our last stage is the startup stage, which is having a big upgrade for 2026. If anyone saw it last year or the year before, this year we've got a full built out stage. We've got some fantastic content going on there. We've got our startup pitch competition, and we've got a ton of VCs, investors, and Europe's leading startups who will be coming to our stage to talk about what they're working on. That's all of them, all six stages.
Wow, it sounds fantastic. Yeah. So the conference runs over, what, 3 days? It sounds like you're going to need all 3 days to get through all of that.
You will. Yeah. Bring your step trackers. I think we'll see how many steps we can put in.
And so many big themes there. So I'm just going to put you on the spot. AI or blockchain, which one's most prominent?
Oh, that is a great question. I think it's actually AI or stablecoins. I think that's where we're seeing the, you know, who's bigger kind of challenge. I think AI probably still has stablecoins beat to the punch in terms of sheer volume, but I think it's a close race.
And what's the biggest business topic, Ollie? So you touched on cyber payments, fraud, fincrime. So looking at it through the business lens.
I think fraud is going to be incredibly big this year. I think what we've seen since COVID and especially as we move into agentic payments and that sort of world, I think, you know, fraud and cybercrime really is like the defining crime of Europe at the moment. It's so big and it's growing so fast. And I think many industries are still struggling to have a good response to it. You know, authorized push payment fraud is probably the most obvious one that's been front of mind in the UK, at least. But the numbers attached to fraud across Europe are growing at an exponential rate. I think we need a response to this as an industry. And I think lots of very smart people are working hard on it. When we think about agentic as well and agentic payments, that opens a new potential threat vector there. If you're instructing an agent to go and make purchases on your behalf, we need to make sure that we are following through with the right protections in place for that to happen properly. I think there are going to be a lot of companies at the show who are talking about that topic. So yeah, I would say fraud is, without a doubt, is the most important business topic, if you like, that we'll be talking about at the show.
Yeah, and I think when I spoke to Scarlett Siever about this, about the global strategy for Money 2020, she remarked that some 30% of the exhibitors and speakers, it was fincrime and fraud for the show. So that really shows how important this is. So in your role as head of content, you have the enviable task of assembling the hundreds of speakers and exhibitors and the way this is all presented and brought to the show. And, well, you can tell us, but I gather it's, you know, thousands of submissions. You have in the media world, you have this thing, which is a call for content, and you say, come on down, who would like to take the stage at the show, and you work from there. But perhaps you can talk us through it. What volume of submissions do you have and how do you actually create the agenda?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I should say, before we even start the call for content, what we do, the minute the show finishes, is we move into a research phase, which lasts 2 or 3 months. That involves 50, 60 interviews with people from across the financial services ecosystem. You know, at Money and within my team, I'm really clear that we're not necessarily the experts on every single element of this industry. It's important that we pick up the phone, that we jump on calls, and that we speak to people who are the experts. We take all of that information, all of that data gathering we do, and we use that to form the content pillars, which again, as I said, are the foundation of our agenda, really. Once we've built that out, once we've done that research, that's when we launch the call for content. And it's really different to a lot of the other industry events that you'll see. We're asking the industry to submit their work and their best ideas, their best practices, their biggest stories to the show. We will then review that editorially as a team. It takes a lot of time. It takes weeks of going through submission after submission. We judge them all against criteria that we set internally, and then we start making decisions. But as you say, nearly 1,000 submissions. It's a huge volume of work. The call for content is in November each year. So it's December that we actually do this review. Just leading up to Christmas, it's, you know, very relaxing time of year. But it's actually amazing because it gives us that kind of insight in what's going on, what ideas people are putting forward. Why do we choose an idea? I think there's a few factors there. We're looking for uniqueness. We're looking not just if 10 companies all submit the same session, it's not one for us. We're looking for unique, original takes on interesting topics. We're also looking for practical examples. It can't all just be theoretical. We want real world use cases. We also want, you know, our speaker lineup has to be representative, not just of the financial services industry, but the world around us. So we're looking for a diverse speaker lineup. We're looking for panels that have speakers from different companies, from different continents, really bringing that whole ecosystem together.
Yeah.
That's just a little taste of what we work on for a couple of months. And then we get into the phase that we're just at the end of now, where we construct the agenda. And that is by far the most challenging and also obviously the most disappointing for a lot of people who do those submissions, because sadly, for the vast majority, it is bad news, it is disappointing, and it is good news for the minority that really push the dial forward when it comes to unique, interesting depth of conversations. I should also say that our call for content, we're not just asking for speakers, we're actually looking for full sessions. So if you're submitting a panel, we want to know who all the speakers are, who the moderator is going to be. We want you to bring that whole thing to life. It is fantastic, the response that we get from the industry. And yeah, a very, very select few of them get to be on our stages.
That's really interesting. I had not thought that one would submit a whole panel. So I thought it would be, you know, I've got a story, I've got a presentation, or I've got a perspective, but sometimes packaging the whole thing up. And how does this sit with the sponsor agenda? Because you have exhibitors, but I think your content stream, this is based on the merit, based on the content, based on the story. This isn't pay to present.
No, not at all. Our team are entirely editorially independent from the commercial operation of the business. We are very much focused on just finding the best quality of content. I'm sure sometimes people feel like, oh, it must be pay to play. How do you even get on this stage? I think that's just a response of how competitive it is. We are really looking for the best in class. But it does mean that less than 10-15% of our submissions make it through, which is very challenging, I know, for a lot of people. But the call for content, I think, is a fantastic way to build the agenda. It really roots everything we do in the industry. It's really crafted by the industry. I think over 70% of our final agenda comes from that call for content. So there's actually very few sessions that my team, outside of the call for content, the vast majority are submitted, approved, and end up in the agenda, which is really cool.
Which is why I was looking forward to this conversation, because you've got this unique vantage point to take the pulse of the whole sector, because you're doing the research bit up front and then you're applying a very high bar on the content filter on all the submissions that come through. And then you're crafting a set of stories to fit the industry based on really the very best that's been put in front of you. So you've really got your finger on them on what's going on.
Yeah, but it's a shame, because I think the thing that gives us the finger on the pulse is also the reason why a lot of people get rejected. So what I mean by that is, if we get 10, 15, 20 submissions all on the same topic, all trying to have the same idea, really, that's 19 rejections that we have to do, and we just have to pick one. And picking that one is the hardest thing. We agonized over some of our decisions, because we would have, you know, 3, 4, 5 submissions that were all fantastic. You know, we're talking speakers who are, you know, top tier A-lister speakers, and we can only choose one of them. And that is very difficult. Yeah, lots of late nights and fun discussions between the team on that.
Starting to sound like a judge on X Factor, but I get it. I'm probably on the other side. It feels like applying for that job that you really, really want, that everyone else wants as well. So let's talk about the speakers a bit then. You said sort of 450 speakers, and you're announcing new folks all the time as you work through building out the agenda. And I did count 172 earlier, and it's a pretty diverse set of representatives. You've got executives from firms like JP Morgan, Revolut, Coinbase. You've also got Nvidia and Anthropic on the stage as well. So perhaps are there folks that you'd like to just highlight that you're particularly excited about that are taking the stage so far this year?
It's like pick your favorite child moment.
Yes.
I think there's a few that I would call out. So one of the first speakers actually who we announced was Arjun Sethi, who's the co-CEO of Kraken. I'm really excited to have him part of the show. They're obviously one of, if not the leading crypto company in that space. They've had some big announcements, some big news recently. And I think, you know, if you read the news articles, you'll hear there's a lot of speculation around the company in the future. I can't wait to have Arjun on stage where we can ask him some of those questions. I would also call out, who have we got? We've got Margareta Berard, the CEO of ABN AMRO. Really excited to have one of the, you know, one of, if not the largest bank in the Netherlands coming to our show to welcome the CEO onto our stages. We've also got, you know, we want our speakers to not just be your typical speakers. So we've got Sarah Wynne-Williams, who's the former director of public policy at Meta and who wrote a book last year called Careless People about her experiences at the company. She was a whistleblower, if you like. Really excited to have her on stage to talk both of, you know, the kind of public policy decisions that really happen at some of the largest tech companies in the world. I think she's got phenomenal perspective on that. And obviously, therefore, her experience leaving that company and afterwards. Really exciting. I can't wait for that conversation. We've also got some of the most senior regulators. We've got some of the most senior payment experts. The list goes on. I could be here all day telling you, but yeah, just a lot of great speakers.
You need to be there. Well, or do you need to be there? Do you stream it, record it? I think there's a digital element to the show as well for folks who can't be in all the sessions. Is that right?
Sadly, you do need to be there. You know, we think it's really important that the ecosystem comes together for these moments. That's kind of what makes those in-person events so special. We have our podcasts. We have a video partnership with the New York Stock Exchange with Taking Stock. You can catch a lot of our content elsewhere. But really, our sessions, our speakers, they are, you know, we put so much work, as you've probably heard from me today, we put so much work into this. The only way to experience it properly is to be there in person and to meet the rest of the ecosystem, to meet all of your, you know, maybe friends, but also make a lot of new friends and connections while you're there.
Okay. And there's another dimension to the show that we haven't really touched on yet, which is the exhibitors. So we've got this amazing agenda and all the speakers, but you've also got a lot of firms that are taking the opportunity to present and to showcase what they have to offer to the sector. So how many exhibitors are you expecting? And are there any companies that you're particularly excited about that have chosen to attend this year?
That's a hard question because I'm not very close to that, but I know we have hundreds of exhibitors. And I know that many of them, from what I saw in Vegas at least, it's not just about, you know, sort of booths and expo. It's also about they put on their own content. They run their own sessions. There's an incredible amount of color and stuff going on there. In fact, one of the most popular booths that I saw in Vegas was a company doing, you know, headshots, doing professional headshots for people while they were there. Last year in Europe, Visa were giving out custom Formula One Lego cars that you could only get by being at the show, which is fantastic. The activations that some of the sponsors and supporters do are phenomenal. And I think, you know, just add another element to the show to really bring it to life.
I've seen at the conferences some of these booth sessions where folks are on wireless headphones and they're giving a presentation. So this is, as you say, there's that content delivery that's happening on the exhibition floor as well.
Yeah.
As well as
And some of them will have, you know, fantastic speakers with CEOs. You know, one of the amazing things about money is it actually really is, because the whole ecosystem is there, we have this fringe agenda, which is essentially all of the content and all of the stuff that's going on outside of the main agenda, all of those activations, all of those different pieces of content that are happening. You know, the fringe agenda is hundreds of things long. And that's, you know, we don't even get involved in the programming of that. That's nice. All done by the ecosystem around us.
I remember from attending Sibos for a few years, many firms, exhibitors there used to fly their own baristas in. So it was all about the coffee. There was often, there was a global barista who sort of followed the conference circuit for certain firms. And I was at the insurance conference this morning. I touched on it and we were recording this morning. But there were a few hosted lounges and coffee setups. And there's one big one in the middle of the floor where it was free coffee until 3 p.m. And at 3 p.m., the espresso martinis start. I thought only in insurance, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
But, yeah, no, and parties as well. You know, we'll...
Yeah.
as the afternoon wears on, you know, a lot of the booths will start their own, you know, evening sessions start. What Money puts on is we have our own industry nights. So on the first night, we have Money Street Fest, which is actually in the center of Amsterdam, where we take over a whole street for the evening. And we have, you know, various activations going on that street. You know, I think it's a fantastic reminder that we are in this beautiful city in the middle of summer as well. So we can be part of what's going on there. And then on the second day, we have Money by Night, which is our industry night that happens actually not on the show floor. It happens in our orbital stage area. And we'll have some fantastic, you know, surprise announcements about who might be there on that night. But yeah, Money 2020 is not just, again, like a traditional conference. There's so much more to it than just that.
Yeah, it's back to that festival vibe and all the other dimensions that you've been talking about, Ollie. Look, I'm really looking forward to it. What's coming next for fintech then? So having sort of surveyed the whole sector and put together the world's best agenda of all things fintech, any predictions for 2026?
So interestingly, I know we've mentioned agentic finance quite a few times. I think when we started this process for Europe, maybe I came in a little bit skeptical. Is this actually a trend? Is this actually happening? When I start to talk to people across the industry and I hear about the numbers that they're seeing, this is a change. This is a real change which is happening, not just in boardrooms, but actually in people's phones and in their everyday lives. Agentic finance is a fascinating trend. I think it has real potential to unlock a lot of other things that we've maybe forgotten about. When I think about open banking, you know, open banking actually is a phenomenal catalyst to unlock agentic finance now. When I think about embedded lending, you know, lending plus agentic, there's some really interesting use cases coming forward. And I don't think this is just hype anymore. I think this is actual real tangible use cases that are starting to be developed. I think in Europe this year, we might hear some announcements about how that industry is being pushed forward. So yeah, I'm sorry to bring up AI because I know it is a buzzword at the moment. But I think that agentic finance piece is super interesting.
It's everywhere. If you can, share an example. So you said you're sort of hearing some numbers and you're seeing some use cases without spoiling what's ahead for the show. But are there any examples from the research on things that you picked up that really made you stop and think?
Well, agentic purchases in particular, you know, people who are actually transacting through LLMs and starting to activate that functionality so that the AI agent is going out and making autonomous purchasing decision on their behalf. Again, when I first heard about this, I thought this must be such a niche example. But I spoke to someone the other day who said, actually, no, we're seeing it in our numbers. Like, we are starting to see this become a small but noticeable percentage that is growing. And that growth is only heading in one direction. Those are the kinds of things that I'm super excited about. I would also talk about agentic lending. You know, there's a lot of banks at the moment that are bringing agents into their borrowing and lending and credit decisioning flows. The mortgage application is the classic one. That used to be a pile of documents that were handed over to a human. That pile of documents can now be handed over to an agent who can do a lot of the structuring of the data and can then hand that over to a human for a decision. But the speed, once the agents are brought into the mix, the speed and the responsiveness is amazing. So yeah, I'm super excited to see it all.
And looking forward for Money 2020 itself, I mean, we're not even at the Europe show, so it might be an unfair question, but, and you've talked about the amazing stages that are even better than the ones last year, but any innovations on the horizon once you get past the show this year?
All for the future. Gosh, 2027, I guess we're talking about.
We are.
It feels like a long way away. I guess, you know, we've got a few objectives internally to see how we can grow the show, how we can make sure that the content that we're putting on our stages is even more tailored and curated to individual people's experiences. I think a lot of people come to our show and what they want is they want an agenda that's built for them. And I think we can do a lot more in that field, making an event agenda that's really tailored to every type of person who comes to our show. So yeah, I'm excited to get started on that. Maybe I'll wait until after June when the dust settles.
Yeah, there's quite a few ideas there. And the one that I'd sort of reflect on a little bit was sort of Money 2020 on demand, because you cover so much content, as well as asking the question about whether there was any sort of digital resources to follow. But I can imagine the attendees go back with complete head spin of three days of complete immersion. And then it's a bit of, what were they talking about on that? I want to go deeper into that topic. So maybe there's something on being able to use some of the resources and learning some, you know, in between the physical shows.
So through our podcasts, especially because of what we have on site, we have two podcast booths and we are recording our own podcasts throughout the show. So a lot of the speakers that you might catch on our, you know, on our larger stages or other stages actually come into our podcast booths. We record those conversations hot off the press and then we package those up. So I would say, if nothing else, make sure you're subscribed to the Money Pot podcast because you'll catch a lot of those conversations and they'll be coming out as soon as the show is over.
And curious, outside of all of this research and podcasting, is there anything on your reading list or your listening list that you might want to recommend to the audience?
Well, that's a good question. I've definitely have to finish reading Careless People by Sarah Wynne Williams ahead of her joining us at our show this summer. I've heard her talk before and I've read nearly all of the book, but I want to make sure I finish it before I can actually hear her live at the show.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good one. And maybe we'll put that in the show notes. And where to find out more? I guess the answer is Money 2020 website. There's a lot there.
Absolutely. Or you can catch me on LinkedIn, Oliver Smith EU on LinkedIn. Would love to connect with everyone. And that's probably the best place.
Brilliant. Well, thanks, Ollie, for taking time to really open my eyes and talk about all the different aspects of the show that's coming up. You seem to be in full swing. I know you've not been in role for that long, but you are fully in the thick of this and clearly loving it because we were smiling all the way through this conversation. You know, lots to look forward to. I'm personally looking forward to the show and wishing you every success. Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you, Tony.